Hello, guys, and welcome to podcast number 50.
Whoa.
Number 50. Tom, how are you?
I'm fine, Dick. How are you?
I'm fine. Tom Ryan has joined us. First time on the
I'm good, thank you.
Long overdue. And welcome, Tom.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you.
I actually do listen occasionally. When I remember, and I'm at my computer, I go to, you know, www, which I understand you don't even have to do.
You don't have to. That's exactly right.
DickPurton.com, and then I see the podcast. I've heard my friend Mr. Delisle on here.
Yes.
Tom is really... I've done some of the very best ones. He's got all those great
Hollywood stories.
Yes, until today. Well, we're going to find out, aren't we?
He never would tell me he was on.
He tells me that he's never heard the recording of him on here.
I was with him the other night, and I told him that you called.
At Joe's Bar.
Yeah, Mr. Joe's.
We get together
like on Tuesday nights every once in a while. And he said, you know, are you going to do it? And I said, yeah, you know, I will talk to Dick, and we'll do it.
Right.
And he said, I've never heard mine. And he said, my wife has never heard mine. And I said, you're kidding. You don't listen to it?
Yeah.
And he said, no, I don't, but I should. I should.
I keep saying, Tom, have you heard the, you know, because we get a lot of positive response.
Yes.
About it. And no, I haven't heard it. Well, why? Well, it makes me nervous. Tom, you're looking at someone else right now across from you, Miss Purton here.
This is number 50, and I think I've been on 48 of them.
Okay.
And you've never listened?
One time I had to listen.
You know what it reminds me of, Jackie?
What?
We had dinner with Ed McMahon one time and his wife when I emceed a thing down at the DAC, and he was the featured speaker and I was the MC. We ate dinner around the table.
Okay.
He and his wife, Victoria, that was his number two wife. And I guess somebody, or maybe it was even me, I said to him, do you watch The Tonight Show? Because it was taped, of course.
Right.
And so they go home. He said, no, I never watched the show. And I said, really? I said, how about Johnny? He said, Johnny watches it every night. And I said, why don't you watch it? He said, because I'm afraid that if I do something, I'm going to tear my performance apart, and I'm going to screw it all up
and
the next time I go on, get in my head, and things won't work anymore.
Yeah.
As long as I know things are working, I don't watch it. He told me.
I was just the opposite. Whenever I did something, I wanted to hear it, because if it was not the quality I thought it was, I'd say, okay, if I do that again, or if I come to that point again, I should do more of this or that.
Sure.
Yeah, an interesting story. John Jannetty.
Northville. The Hole in the Wall.
John has three children. One of them,
one
Laura.
One of each.
And Laura Jannetty was an intern for a while at WOMC.
Okay.
And Laura also was in their plays at Jannetty's Hole in the Wall, Dinner Theater.
Right.
Yep, that's
she was in all their plays. Very funny. Very outgoing.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that one time we were talking to Tom Delisle.
Mm-hmm.
She had called him one day when there was a big, huge golf tournament years and years ago.
Right.
I mean, and Jose
Feliciano.
No, Abathalo.
I know that. Oh, the golfer. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was in it. And Tom, she calls him and they're talking. And she said, I just got done watching whatever, the U.S. Open or whatever it was. He said, don't tell me who won. He said, I've taped it. And when I get home, I want to see it. So don't say who won. She said, I'm not going to tell you who won. I can't pronounce his name anyway. So,
little hint, huh?
Anyway, Laura was very outgoing. And she's in these plays and she interned on the radio. So I said to her one day, Laura, I need a female voice for this skit we're doing. She said, oh, no, I'm not talking on the radio. I said, Laura, you're in plays. You do all this. Please, all I need you to say is, so what does that mean? She refused to do it. She would never, as an intern at the radio station, be on the air. And I kept off the air. I'd say, why? Why won't you talk?
Right.
I can't do that. There's too many people listening.
I'm looking at a picture right now on the wall of my daughter, Jessica. It's a whole family picture, in case anybody thought I just had a picture of one daughter.
Are they available at popular prices?
Yeah, right. And her husband, Chris, is hysterical. Right, Jack?
Oh, he's unbelievable.
I mean, he's not a half-wit. He's a wit. He's a full-fledged wit. So I had him on the air one day. I said, come on in and maybe, you know, he's a sports fan and do some sports. Just do the sports and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
He did not want to. He came in, but he just read the sports and that was it.
Yep.
And another guy like that who you know very well, Bill Kooman in Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah.
Bill is as funny as they come.
Yes.
Hugely bright and funny guy. But as a performer, no. He just likes to, you know, sit around and
here's
be great.
In our own family, Joanne makes a living on television.
Yeah.
Wonderful newscaster.
Yeah.
And
well, you better say that.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, I love her work on Channel 4. and so watch her every weekend. And so I will ask Joanne, you know, would she come in like on a podcast or do the radio? Or whatever.
Right.
Whoa. She doesn't like the just chit-chat stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas she's very comfortable, you know, doing prepared and serious material.
Right.
Very comfortable. I mean, very. And if it's serious, yeah, she's comfortable. When they, back in the day when we were on the air, suddenly I became the newswoman on the show.
That's right.
Due to some Jackie Duncan decisions at first. Well, yes, Jackie Duncan, but later on. And terrified. Because my feeling is I don't like to deliver bad news. I don't like to read the serious stuff. I like to comment on it and make fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Joanne always says to me, how do you go on the radio? How do you go on podcasts and just talk?
Yeah.
And I go, how do you sit there and go, thanks, Diana.
Because they read a teleprompter.
But to me, that's so much scarier than just making stuff up.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Or just whatever comes into your head. But again, that leads me back to why I can't listen. Because if what came into my head and I said wasn't great, I don't want to know about it. I don't want to relive it. I hope it's good. It's out there. And I just can't do it.
I do want to assure our sponsor, the Suburban Collection,
that
a lot of people do listen from what we are told by Google. And don't forget, the Suburban Collection winner of the Free Press Automotive Leadership Award for Outstanding Metro Detroit Retailer. Think of that now. So they sold 300,000 cars last year who made the choice to do business with the Suburban Collection. Moi being one of them.
Yes.
I'm sure Mr. Ryan, too. And... three, Mr. Ryan.
Well, sure. I'm looking for a new car, and can you get me a deal?
Well, I know some of the people over there.
Well,
I'll
then maybe
do what
I should
can.
Stop by.
And I said trois. That's three. I meant
deux. I thought trois was
deux.
Three.
Deux.
I'm deux. Deux. I'm dumb and deux.
You know what, Jackie? I wouldn't listen to this if I were you.
That's right. She won't believe me. Anyway, on behalf of our sponsor, the Suburban Collection folks, I hope you'll do business with them. They're really, truly great people. 26 dealerships and even more. More brands at those dealerships all over town. Anyway, I wanted to do something I have not done. It was my birthday yesterday. We're recording this on the 12th of July. So my birthday was yesterday, and I want to thank everyone who sent me birthday greetings and so on and so forth. In particular, and I've never done this before, but some people, long-distance people, hi to Marilyn Bakamule in the Virgin Islands, Trond Hammersland in Sweden, John Christian in Cyprus, Kathleen Myers McKay in family, only in Buffalo, but still.
Hey.
And Flash Phelps, by the way, on the 60s channel in Sirius XM, I understand did a nice birthday greeting to me yesterday for about a minute or so.
Awesome.
And I know that from Art Volo, who we all know.
Oh, radio's friend?
Radio's best friend.
Best friend.
Yeah, that's right.
BFF.
So anyway, thanks to Art and thanks to Flash. And as a matter of fact, yesterday being my birthday, 7-Eleven, right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. This is hard to believe. I did not know that 7-Eleven gave free Slurpees on your birthday. Now, I'm assuming they just don't do it on 7-11. It would be pretty stupid to get free Slurpees one day a year. They must do it. Do they not on everybody's birthday?
No,
I didn't know any of this.
I'm pretty sure.
What?
And I'd have
You're
to check
sure
this
what?
Out. That you only get it on 7-Eleven because it's there.
Really?
Because the store is called 7-Eleven. Therefore, on 7-Eleven day, everybody gets a free Slurpee.
Well, that may be the case.
I think that's what it is. Now, other places like Dairy Queen.
Jack's
I signed
Car
up
Watch.
For their birthday club. Yeah, and I get like a free mini Blizzard or whatever it is on my birthday.
Yeah.
And things like, you know, Bill Knapp's used to have the cake, of course.
Oh,
and
sure.
All that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just your birthday. That
Holy
you get
Sepulchre
the 7-Eleven.
Cemetery had a sign out in front that said, Happy Birthday. Birthday.
Well, I'm not too surprised. That sign gets
Can't
bigger
wait to see ya.
And bigger every year. Yeah.
Here, right. I brought you something for your birthday,
well,
too,
they,
by the
they
way.
They said, don't be a stranger.
I have something for your birthday.
You have something for my birthday?
Yeah. Oh. I thought you'd enjoy those.
These are little.
They're not smelly ho-hums, are
these
they?
Are,
no, those are stick-ums. You peel the back off. They're little character faces from CKLW.
Yeah, from CK, yeah, with a kind of a neat little caricature they had of me.
Right.
Oh, I
which
love
is really
it.
One of the best ones they've had. Why do I know Fred Stickum? Fred Stickum was a phony sponsor. Was that on my show or was that on
You're not thinking of Frederick Belsky.
No, but I know. I remember Frederick Belsky. Yeah. I wish I could find that
jingle.
I have
the jingle.
You have the jingle.
Oh, I have so much stuff that you'd want, and prices are getting better.
Fine. I may take you up on it.
I did find, by the way,
Frederick Belsky. Wasn't that how it went?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you never knew what he was advertising.
Where did I bring that up from Cincinnati?
I think you did.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
And so I edited out what he did for a living.
Yes, you must have, because we would play it, and people would call and say, what is he advertising?
That's right. That was the whole point of it all.
Yeah.
It was just Frederick Belsky.
It's a cute jingle.
Do business with Fred Belsky, and nobody knew what it was, which was the point of the whole thing. But anyway, I appreciate all these fine people that did the nice. And
we should
next
send
year, hopefully, I'll get
stickers,
a salmon slurpee. You never know. What's that?
I said we should send him each one of those stickers, but there aren't enough.
Well,
there
know.
Aren't enough, and that like would be. I don't have their addresses. I don't.
Good point.
See what I mean?
I'm, yeah.
That would complicate a lot of things.
Yes,
a lot
would.
Of things.
It would.
But anyway, Tom.
Dick.
Mr. Ryan,
Harry.
Tom and I go back to day one on the air, right? My first day on the air, because you were at Keener.
I was there. I started as the mailboy when it was WKMH.
KMH, right, yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And 6 months after I started there,
Nellie Knorr, who owned the
station.
Joseph,
wasn't it? Was it Mike Joseph?
Mike Joseph was the consultant who had transferred it from KMH to Keener.
Right. He was the one that decided that we were going to go, top 40 radio, because I don't even remember what we did play. I think it was kind of just a mixture of
stuff, yeah. And Jerry Vale.
Yes. And we had Gene. Do you remember the name Gene Osborne?
I sure do.
He was a sportscaster.
Oh.
And Gene Osborne would recreate baseball games on WKMH. KMH carried the Tigers.
Yeah.
But he also did baseball recreations.
Okay. I saw that done in Buffalo.
This is back in the 60s.
When I was a kid in Buffalo. Charlie Bailey did it. With a little, you can go ahead, but I mean, there was a little wooden block.
Yes.
And he would hit it, and that would simulate the baseball on the bat.
What they would do, and I had never seen this done before, he had a huge record. I mean, like a 33 and a third, but twice as big.
But bigger, yeah.
It was just crowd noise.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had some cartridges, which we called them in those days, things you just put in the machine and it would play something.
Right.
He would hit the thing, but people exploding in cheers. And a guy, he would get up during the commercials and go into the newsroom, and there would be a teletype, a special teletype machine.
I know what you mean.
That said what every batter did.
Yep, that's right.
Next pitch, fastball, foul ball, right field.
That's right.
And he would just read it and recreate the game.
When I was a kid, I went down to WEBR in Buffalo, 970 AM, and I saw Charlie Bailey do exactly that. The little ticker tape came across right in the studio with him, though. He'd look at it, he'd read it, and he'd recreate in a very exciting way the game, like he was right there at the game, and I'm sure a lot of people thought he was.
Oh, sure.
Those were the visiting games, the home games. They were at the stadium.
Well, this one with Gene Osborne wasn't even a Tiger game. This was like the game of the week or something, and he did he would do the Yankees in Boston or something like that. But that's before October 31st? Was the
Halloween?
Day we changed, because that day was Halloween.
It was. To Keener 13,
right.
Top 40, and became top 31, because it was Keener 13,
that's
top
right.
31 records. And I wasn't there at the time.
No, you were not.
I came in a year and a half later.
Well,
but you
that's
guys
right.
shot to the top instantly. It was within 30 days, you were the number one radio
that's
station
right.
in,
wow.
in Detroit.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow, wow,
true
wow.
story. And when I arrived in town, May of 1965, May 24th was my first day in the air, and we got there the previous Sunday night and went on the air, the next morning, the next evening.
The 10 to 1. Was it 10 to 1 you were on?
I was on 10 to 1 at night. Yeah. The history of that is I turned down 3 to 7 to replace Gary Stevens.
That's right.
Turned it down, flat out. Why? Because Frank Maruca, the program director, said in a 3-hour interview, told me how great Gary was. First 2 hours, all about Gary. And then he offers me the job. And besides, I had never done a top 40, real top 40 show ever. And in the 3 to 7 slot, that's what had to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I couldn't do it, so I said no. Frank calls me back in Cincinnati, where I was, at WSAI. Great, great radio station. And he said, I'd like to offer you 7 to 10 at night. And I said, ooh, 7 to 10, teen time, ooh, no. Had never done a teen show, because I was on a top 40 station in Detroit, but in Cincinnati, but it was, I did middays. And I just, middays was a different feel. So I turned down 7 to 10 at night. A week, 2 weeks later, whatever it was, he called me again. I remember I was down in the
He
basement.
Was desperate, wasn't he?
He was desperate. So was I. And he offered me 10 to 1 at night. I said, I'll take it. Gail looks at me like, are you crazy? You've just turned down Afternoon Drive, which, you know, right. she maybe didn't call it that at the time. And then 7 to 10 at night, and I take 10 to 1. Why? Even though I knew it was nighttime, teen time, I figured nobody would really give a damn.
Right.
And I could do whatever the heck I wanted, and nobody would really, you know, it wasn't that's that important as long.
Fun.
So I took it, and then that's where I met Tom, who was doing the switchboard at the time.
I was making extra money if they said I was the mail boy and also working, writing, you know, stuff for continuity and things.
Right, right.
And then they said, well, would you want to, you know, we need somebody to answer the phones to take requests.
Yeah, right.
And if you will work, I think I worked till like 11 or 12 or something.
You were on, as I recall, I thought you were on to 12, but you stayed over to 1.
Yeah.
Because I went off at 1 and found out that Tom did voices.
Yeah.
And I didn't do any voices. I was lucky I did my own voice. And so we kind of invented some stuff. Do you remember what we invented?
Well, no, I don't. What? Oh, Ma and Pa Poppins.
I'm reading about that right now.
Yes,
I am reading about this. Where? I love this. From the Knorr Broadcasting Corporation. Okay, this is back then. Okay. And it says, laughing with a capital L as in lots of fun, pretty well describes the reaction of the multitude of Detroiters who have made the Dick Pertin Show their morning habit.
Oh, that's when I was switched 2 months later to mornings.
And it talks about Ma and Pa Poppins, George Sobolski.
Oh, one of my favorite characters.
You're right. Oh. George, you know, passed away.
I know that.
About a year ago.
I've got tapes of him, too.
Do you really? Oh, yeah. I have one somewhere. George Sobolski was a voice that Jim Martin, the newsman, did.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Jim was married to Mary Martin. That's Gail's best friend to this day.
Very day.
They talk on the phone all the time.
I know.
So along with the daughters and another daughter and a daughter and a daughter.
But mostly me.
But I know. So anyway, So then Jim was Jim Martin on the air. I called him King Jim Martin for some reason. Whatever.
He was a newsman, right?
He was a newsman, yeah. But he did this incredible old, I guess you say, old Polish, Eastern European
Balkan
voice.
Yeah. Yeah. He would like, George Sobolski, let me tell you about Blitzky's black bread.
Exactly. Yes. And he could make this stuff up on the top of it, and it was hysterical.
I love it.
And then, of course, they got divorced. Jim and Mary got divorced, and then Jim moved down to Florida, and I really never saw it. Then, wait a minute. No, then he began, believe it or not, to work for my father
as
a salesman. Yes. Yes. Before he moved to Florida, he worked here in town when he got out of radio. Worked for my, and now he told me a story one day, probably the last time I saw Jim. He said, you know, I don't know if your dad has ever heard your show. And I said, why doesn't that believe me? And
Surprise, you mean?
And I said, why do you say that, Jim? He said, well, we were in the car, we were about to go on a sales trip, and we just left, we were, 5-10 minutes out of the house or whatever. And he said, we're talking business, as my dad always talked. And I said to him, said Jim, he said, you know, Paul or Joe, whatever, his name was either Paul or Joe.
Still not sure.
And, your son, Dick's on the radio right now. You might want to tune in and listen. He said, yeah, well, some other time. And
we see where Jackie gets this.
Yes. Yes. That's true. It runs in the family. So anyway, and there's more to it with my dad, but anyway, that'll do it. But yeah, Jim was.
Oh, he was.
But we had a great staff. We had a guy named Ed Mullen.
Oh.
And Ed was a fabulous talent. He had what a great voice he had, and a good looking guy. I get a phone call one day. I hope I haven't told the story in this podcast before. I get a phone call one day from Jerry Goodwin, who worked noon to three on Keener, and Jerry says, Are you sitting down? I said, no. And he said, well, Ed Mullen died last night. And I said, was killed last night. I said, what? And he said, yeah, he said he was killed on Telegraph Road at 7 Mile. He and another guy were going north on the south side of the road.
Oops.
And, so anyway, I sit down. I said to Gail, I said, my God, Ed Mullen, I loved Ed, great guy. And I'd gotten him a job, as a matter of fact. This comes later on. Anyway, 5 minutes later, the phone rings, and it's Jerry again. I was wrong. He's not dead.
Oh, jeez.
He's not dead? What's the story? They took him. The EMS took him. He had a big slash on his head. They thought he was dead because when he arrived, he was like incommunicado. He appeared to be, but he's not dead. So he just, I think in Ed's case, he just parted his hair on the other side. And so Ed had a little problem.
Oh, yeah.
As a lot of guys.
Just by driving on the other side of the road, yes.
So Ed ended up leaving or being fired or whatever happened, I don't know, on the radio station at Keener. And so I actually got him a job in Pittsburgh at WTAE. I knew a guy, the program director I knew at the time. And I called. I said, this guy is fabulous. I said, may have a problem, but if you're aware of that, maybe, you know, and so on. Ed went there, and he got a job. But what happened was he was only about 40 years old, and one Thanksgiving, he said to his wife he didn't feel well. So she said, well, why don't you take a nap? So he went in, you know, noon or whatever it might be. He went in, he took a nap. And she said, well, I should get Ed up now after a while because the dinner is about ready, you know. And she opened the door, and when she opened the door, Ed was like rolling over and kind of moaning. And she said, well, I'm not going to disturb. I'll give him another hour's sleep. Right. She did. She went in an hour later. Ed was dead.
Oh, my God.
And do we have any more of these funny stories?
Well, and do we have any proof that Ed's dead? Because I'm waiting for the phone to ring right
well,
now.
Well, Jerry Goodwin called you. Or is he dead?
No, Jerry's doing fine. I saw him at the radio reunion. Not this one, but the one before.
Oh, yeah, I did too, yes.
But anyway, one more Ed Mullen story.
Okay.
And that's when Ed, I used to begin, you know, when they shifted me to the morning drive after Swing and Sweeney got into the fight with Jerry Goodwin.
Oh,
yeah, fist fight. And so they moved me up 2 weeks from starting the morning show. So I started in August, first week of August 9th or 10th, 1965, in the morning show. So now I'm up at 4 in the morning because I have to do 5 a.m.
Yep.
The show started. So Ed is the newsman. He's the morning news guy. And Ed, you know, that's a tough shift for anybody, especially if maybe you had a cocktail or two the night before. And so Ed would sleep sometimes, not go home, sleep on the little couch. There was a little couch in the front lobby of Keener. And when I say a little couch, it was short couch. You know,
I love seat.
Well,
maybe.
Ed was short, too.
Yeah, 4 or 5 feet long. Let's
yeah.
Say. So he would sleep on that couch. So I would wake Ed up if he wasn't already awake to do the 5:15 a.m. news.
Uh-huh.
5:15 and then again at 5:45. It was not on the top or the bottom of the arm. So he missed a few. So one morning I'm in there and I said, Ed, look it. He's on the couch. He's sleeping. He's sleeping one off. I said, Ed, you got to go. Like this. And I said, Ed, Mr. Patterson called. Mr. Patterson was the general manager.
Mm-hmm. Don't,
and
don't,
I mean
don't.
A tough, yeah. Tough guy.
Yeah.
Guy spelled not G-U-I, but S-O-B.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ed wouldn't get up. He would not get up. And so I finally tipped the couch over. Little small guy, he fell on the floor off the couch. Well, that woke him up. He went in, and somehow he did the newscast.
Oh, my God.
But he was
God.
Such a great talent, he could do a thing like
yep.
that.
Yep.
And then he did the 5:45. But between, he'd be taking, you know, a little quick cat nap on the couch. But I Ed was a fabulous guy. It just, you know, the old devil, demon,
wow.
Guy.
Wow.
But anyway, we had a great time on the air that nighttime show, Tom, from
yes.
10 to 1,
yes.
Where Tom was on the switchboard, and I would call him up.
Yep.
And I'd say, Tom, I need you to do this, that, or the other yep. thing, whatever mm-hmm. it might be. Mm-hmm. And Tom would come up with the voice, and we'd go on the air live, right?
Yeah.
We didn't tape much at all.
No.
We'd go on the live with the voice. And for some reason, all the stuff we did, Ma and Pop Poppins Fan Club, but you got to understand, that was 1965.
Right.
And this was not corny. We were purposely being corny.
Right.
It was
yes.
a shtick we were doing. And we didn't... We didn't pitch to the younger kids like Scott Regan.
No.
His pitch was a little younger.
Yes.
And we were pitching more to college-type kids.
Right.
And it went over very, very well. And, you know, that it was lucky. Now, why were we really lucky? I didn't mean to get going on this. I don't know how I did.
This is great.
And, he's hard to stop.
Yeah. We were lucky, though. And the reason we were lucky was because there was no FM.
Right.
Keener, when I got to Keener, they already had a 20 share in the morning, a 30 share in the afternoon, and a 40 share at night. I inherited all that.
Uh-huh.
So in other words, when I go on the air on that first Monday, 4 out of 10 listeners to the radio are listening to Keener.
That's mm-hmm. incredible.
So I had instant recognition.
Yeah. Can you imagine that now?
No, you can't do it anymore.
There is no radio anymore.
No.
There's no radio.
Well, it's hard to be a personality anymore.
Oh. Yep.
Very few.
Well, in
especially
five
in music
or less.
Radio. In talk radio, yes, but not in music radio. Very little bridging the gap of
yep.
music radio.
No, and when we were on at night, you know, the signal was horrible.
Oh, the Keener signal was awful.
And we did well. I mean, it really yeah. was.
We missed the whole east side.
Oh, they
you
never heard us.
People from Grosse Pointe, St. Clair Shores, yeah. maybe even Warren. I'm not sure. I don't think Warren. But anyway, they didn't know what the hell Keener was
no.
after maybe 7 p.m. You know, during the daytime, they could hear it. But that's AM for you. The signals, you know.
Sorry. My high school radio station to hear WBFH, which is now great and wins all kinds of awards and whatever.
Yeah.
We were 10 watts, and you had to literally park in the parking lot outside the radio station to hear it. And I used to ask my sisters to come listen to my hour-long show on history.
Did you listen to it?
No. No, God, no. Of course not.
So you just had your sister say, you were pretty good tonight when you talked about this.
Yeah, really.
We have to sit in the parking lot any longer?
At Syracuse University, where I was on the college FM station,
right.
We didn't even broadcast to the public. It was what they called wired wireless.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at least on the campus it was.
Okay.
I don't know how that figured. But that's what they called wired wireless. But now, of course, they have two or three radio stations in Syracuse. And
I did that at UAD. I was on the campus station. You could only hear it on campus.
That's basically what it was.
On Livernois or someplace around the thing. And you know, you just sat down in a basement and had a microphone. And
wasn't Livernois the avenue of fashion?
Well, it is. It was 7 to 8 miles.
Oh, it was. Oh.
Probably 6.5 to 7 to 8 miles. Oh, yeah. It was the avenue of fashion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was only there one time, I think. Well, maybe. But Darby's?
Oh, well, Darby's was on 7 Mile Road in Wyoming.
Was that a deli?
It was a restaurant, a regular restaurant.
Oh, it was? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Darby's was over there, and Livernois had Checker Barbecue, which was real close to 8 Mile Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had some really nice
Harry
Solomon's Menswear.
I remember the name, anyway. Was on
the Avenue of Fashion.
I don't know if they were on the air at Keener, but I do remember Gene Marolas. What a great, great guy.
Oh, yeah.
The commercials.
Yep.
And the one I still hear that plays in town occasionally, Roy O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. Nine Mile and Mac.
How'd that go? Roy O'Brien. Yeah, whatever the heck it
and
was.
Then the other, Gene Marolas. What a great, great, great guy.
But wasn't it funny with Marolas?
His brother was Marolas in the East Side.
Well,
Gene Marolas was the West, I don't know. Something.
Well, there was a Marolas before, when we were WKMH.
Yeah.
And Robin Seymour was there.
10 a.m., right. Yeah.
Robin Seymour was there, and he did the mornings.
Yep.
And every night, I would have to, as I was going home from work, I had to drive from Keener to Cherry Hill and something or other where Robin Seymour lived.
Okay.
And deliver him his book. Now, the book is a thing that an on-the-air talent has, that all his live commercials are in it, and what's going on. And
the log.
The log.
I didn't know
I'd have
that.
To take his book to his house.
Really? I never had a
And
book.
I always thought it was kind of wild that Marolas Chevrolet was on Ford Road. Was kind of weird. I would take his book to him, and he had two little daughters at the time.
Yeah.
And I would knock on the door, and they'd come, and I'd, you know, kid with the kids. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's for your dad, and go. So one day at work, he said to me, it was on a Friday, or it was on a Thursday, and he said, do you have plans for Friday night? And I said,
he was asking you out?
Yeah, well, I was afraid of that. And we picked out furniture, and it was nice.
Thank you, Jerry Sandusky.
Anyway, so I said, well, I know why. He said, well, my two daughters just think you're the funniest person in the world, and they would like to know if you would come to dinner. And he had an in-ground pool and everything. And if you'd go swimming, you know, and we'd all have dinner together. And I said, yeah, okay, fine. I did. And I did. And at our
good
last...
to meet the two attractive daughters.
Well, I was about 19 or 18, and they were about 6 or 7.
Oh,
you know?
So...
At the last radio reunion that he was honored, along with yourself and Specs Howard. And,
yeah, he was. That's right. And Ernie Harwell.
That's right. And after the party was over with, which was one of the worst parties because you couldn't talk to anybody in the room we had. Do you remember that? They had a band. At the hotel, the last radio reunion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had a band.
Yes.
And if
I tried to talk the guy who booked the band out of it, and so did Art Volo. We don't need a band, but the guy was so insistent. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just for a moment, you've got about 400 and 450 basically guys in this room.
Right.
But he thought there should be a band.
Well, and these are guys who talk for a living.
Yes,
have
right.
spent their whole lives.
And haven't seen a lot of them in years.
Exactly.
They've flown from all over the country. They've flown in. As soon as we finished the whole program, the band starts playing.
Right.
Nobody danced.
And who's you can't hear. Dance? You're yelling at people.
Right. Exactly.
What did you do? Where you been?
Right.
So anyway, at that reunion, I saw Robin, and he said, I have to tell you a story. My little girls adored you. And it made me feel good because mm-hmm. he said they just, when you would come to the door and they say, Daddy, can we answer? Can we answer? You know, and then they would come yeah. tonight. Mm-hmm. And he said that day when you said yes, that you would come to dinner and, mm-hmm. and swim with the kids, he said they were the happiest kids in the world.
Really?
So mm-hmm. Where are they now?
Where yeah, are sure. they
yeah,
now?
Yeah, where are they now when you need them?
He's out in L.A., right?
Yeah, Ryan Seacrest Seymour. he sells, he's in the art business.
Okay.
Yeah, sells paintings, art, whatever. In fact, I think that thing on the wall came from him. Looks like a phony signature to me. That thing. But anyway, it was Keenan was a great radio station.
It was a great station.
It was a king of the hill for four years.
I have to tell you one quick story about George Cebulski. One of the funniest things I thought he ever said.
Yeah.
You had him on the air, and one of the things, he was the head of promoting you.
Yes, that's right.
The Cebulski agency was in charge of promoting the Dick Burton show.
That's right, yeah.
And you asked him, I think the thing was, you said, do you do anything else? And George said, yes, I run a compass shop. We sell nothing but compasses.
Right,
and
yeah.
you said, where is it located? He said, it's on the north by northeast corner. And it just floored me when he said that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He was was the funniest character I'd ever heard.
You're right. But then when, you know, he kind of left town and it just, we couldn't get it to work. He didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do it anymore. And that's, you know, that happens. But that reminds me of that sign that I saw at the corner of Northwestern Highway. Right near XYZ. And it said, it literally said southbound.
Southeastbound.
Southeastbound Northwestern.
Yeah.
And I said, wow. I mean, I lived here and still didn't understand where I should be going. Honest to God. But, yeah, that was great. The Dearborn, that was a great place. And you know, another person that sent birthday greetings to me was Helen Pasikarnas.
Oh.
And Helen was Gene Taylor's wife.
Wife, yes. Yeah.
And, of course, Gene's been gone now since 2001. He died January 6, 2001. I remember that. With that terrible asthma attack he had up north. But. And thanks to Helen. But I met Gene at Keener.
That's right.
And
he used to bring food to the back door, didn't he?
The first time Gene and I met, I had just said on the air, that was one of the very first days I was on the air, and I said, boy, I'm hungry. And somebody bring up some food. You know, these are, you know, different days in radio and stuff. And so there came a knock or a ring, whatever, at the back door, and I went there, and here stands Gene, who I think had just graduated from high school, and he's got two Coney Islands on his hand from, was it Joe B's Coney Island?
Yeah, I think you're right,
On Michigan Avenue in Dearborn.
Oh.
And here they're loaded with chili, and in those days, man, I could eat 10 of those, you know. I still could, but I don't. But anyway, yeah, so that's why I met Gene. So Gene would then come up occasionally from 10 to 1, mm-hmm. and then in the morning, I went on the morning show a couple months later, and he would just stand in the studio, and we'd talk, you know, when the records were on or whatever the case may be. Well, I didn't know that Gene was funny for about a year. It may have been a half a year. I don't know what it was, but it was a long time. He never said anything funny and never attempted to do anything. And he finally, I guess, said, do you mind if I try to write something or something like that? And because Gene's talent was really more in writing than anything else. Gene once told me, for example, that when he did do this in Toronto, when he later on lived in Toronto, he had a comedy troupe that he was the head of. In that comedy troupe were the SCTV people.
Oh, my goodness.
You're talking, you know, the John Candy.
Shut the front door.
Catherine O'Hara.
I mean, these were the people in the troupe. And I said, well, were you part of the comedy troupe? Yeah. And he said, no. And I said, why? He said, I couldn't ad lib like they could. Well, who could, really, to tell you the truth?
No kidding. Right.
I mean, to this day, they're as brilliant as anybody I've ever seen before.
Absolutely.
And in fact, when John Candy died, it was like I died. And I remember calling Tom Sharp, who's on TV doing the Century 21,
versus
21st Century auto insurance.
Yes.
Yeah, that's his voiceover.
Yeah.
And they compete with Geico and stuff.
Oh, sure. I've seen those. I've
that's
heard
Tom Sharp.
I've heard
him. And I happened to call Tom up. Well, the reason I called him when I heard that John Candy had died, this is a few years ago anyway. When did John die? 10 years ago? Is it that long ago?
It's got to be, yeah.
This is the third person I've talked about in this podcast.
that you know, died. Gee, look at the time. I really have to go.
I didn't mean to be doing this. I hope I'm not preoccupied with that. But anyway, I called Tom up to see how he felt about John DeConnick, and he was crying when he answered the phone. He was crying, and it was about John Candy.
Hey.
He was such a talent.
Well, there was John Candy, Rick Moranis, Catherine O'Hara.
Yep.
Yes.
Who was the other?
Eugene Levy.
Who?
Dave Thomas, Eugene Levy.
Who was the other woman?
Andrea Martin.
Yes.
And who was?
By the way, she was Gene's, the godmother of one of Gene's two sons.
Yes.
Andrea Martin.
Yeah, you're right.
Who was in My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
Well, they were all in a lot of stuff. Catherine O'Hara was in the Macaulay Culkin, Home Alone, the Home Alone.
She was fabulous. And
so was John Candy. He was in that. He was the leader of the Polish band.
He was indeed.
And I will tell you, one of the greatest moments of my life is when we opened at Second City, because I was in the opening cast of the Detroit Second City, and John Candy, they flew him in. John Candy, along with Norm from Cheers and some other Second City alum, and he came back in the dressing room, and I mean, he filled it side to side. I mean, you knew the man was not going to make it long, because he literally, from the two sides of the dressing room, filled it up. And the speech he gave us with tears in his eyes about enjoy every second you're on that stage, because this is the best time of your life. He said, no matter what you go on to do professionally, do movies, do podcasts. Okay, he didn't mention that. But he did say, whatever you do, this is it. The most fun you'll ever have.
Okay.
And it was. I mean, it was incredibly fun to go out
on
stage.
Did you ever tape any of those shows?
But the quality, you know what?
Did you ever watch them?
No.
I didn't think so.
Of course not.
Did you ever see her at Second City?
No, I never did.
Oh, she was in the original cast. And is it the story, as I remember, Jackie, is that another girl asked you to drive her down there to Second City so that she could audition. And Jackie said,
I can't. I said, I can't. I work. I worked in an advertising agency. I was a creative, associate creative director. I said, I can't take time off work. She said, please, I'm scared to go. Just go with me. I said, you don't have to audition. I said, whatever. I got the half day off work, went down. I got down there. He said, what's your name? I said, I'm not auditioning. And they said, well, you're here. What? I said, okay. So I auditioned and I made callbacks. I got a call back that night and she didn't. And then I got a call back again and I got a call. And 2 weeks later, I quit my job and started making $275 a week, doing 8 shows a week at Second City.
And she was there. There were 4 guys and 3 women, 3 females.
Yep.
You and 2 other girls, obviously.
Yep. Angela and, the other one we won't mention. That's all right.
Okay.
She didn't last too long. And then and the guys who I'm still friends with, Tim Newberg and...
How many people auditioned?
Tim Pryor, Andy Newberg. 1,700 people ended up auditioning at the Fox Theater. They had no idea what... There were 2. They said come at 12 or come at 3, basically.
Right.
And we went at 12. Right. The place was mobbed. Had no idea the interest would be that great. And you auditioned in mass, and then they would, I couldn't believe I got a phone call, and they kept cutting it down, cutting it down, cutting it down, and then we made the cast. So when we opened, it was a big deal, and they brought in, like I said, John Candy and Norm from Cheers, who, I hate to say it, but he was a jerk.
Was he?
He was not nice, yeah.
Really?
And
hey, Norm, how you doing?
And
Norm listens to this podcast.
What did you have to do to audition? Did they give you a subject? Or?
Oh, you do 3 through the door is a thing you do where you have to come through, you walk on stage, come through an actual, pretend door in character. You take a suggestion from an audience. They say, okay, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, go. Here's a starting line, start. It's like everything is improvised.
Okay.
And you have to become the person.
Okay.
And the big rule in that, much like in radio, is yes and, which is if somebody says, if you walk on stage and you go, hey, Dad, how you doing? You don't look at the other person and go, I'm not your father.
Right.
You immediately say, well, hello, son. Good to see you. When'd you get out of the huskow? And you build the scene.
And
that
so
way.
It goes.
And so it goes. And you keep building. So it was an amazing experience, but really helped me get ready for radio. Not that I did well on radio, but it did certainly help.
How do you spell
that.
Huskow?
HOOSCOW.
That's
on the website.
That's huskow.
Uh-huh. Or Moscow.
Ask Monica Conyers. She's still in, isn't she?
She's still in the slammer. She
in
is
the
indeed.
Slammer.
Folks, I want to thank you very much for listening to the podcast today, brought to you by the Suburban Collection. Last year, I guess I'm trying to think. I believe they gave to 45 different charities. The employees at the Suburban Collection. There's a new thing coming up. I know in a couple of weeks or a month or so. Anyway, about a new charity that the Suburban Collection is involved in. We'll tell you about it at that time. Anyway, their philosophy is they invest in their dealerships, their people, and their community as well. So it's the Suburban Collection. Thanks for their sponsorship. Tom, thanks for being here.
Pleasure. A lot of fun.
Tom Ryan, ladies and gentlemen.
Loved it. Love seeing you guys together.
Absolutely. Jackie, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see
thank
you next
you,
week,
Jackie.
Folks. Thanks a million. Bye-bye for now.
That was fun.